You know ID in the D in the L O A. ID in the D in the F E A. You know ID in the D in the L O A. ID in the D in the F E A.
Hello and welcome to a special emergency episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Caracino,
and we are joined this week to talk about the Seahawks' thrilling victory over the New England Patriots by the decider. He's back, but not to talk about teriyaki because that was so contentious last week. Please welcome to the pod, Zach Whitman.
Hey guys, it is so good to be here. I, as a huge fan of the emergency pod, this is a life goal, I would say, on par with seeing Russell Wilson throw 5 touchdowns. This is right up there.
There it is. Before we get started, there are more important things in football, and definitely wanted to send our condolences to Patriots running back James White, who did not play in this game after receiving the unthinkable news that his father had died in a car accident earlier Sunday, his mother in critical condition, and our thoughts and prayers certainly with James White and his family during this difficult time. But the game went on, and what a game it was. I feel like we have to start at the very end, the final play here. What odds did we give Cam Newton of scoring a touchdown on goal to go from the 1 yard line?
Wait,
final
can play we of the just, game. Can we get some hype for a second before we get into that? I've got Zach. Hello. We're here with the great man. I've been down here for 20 minutes practicing my hellos. I'm down here. We're here with the great man of Let Russ Cook.
The Toshi of Let Russ Cook.
The Toshi of Let Russ Cook. I've got pouring myself here some victory scotch. For this one, this
That's
is
not the
huge.
Thing to, I'm pouring myself some victory Rainier.
I don't have a Rainier.
that's your problem, not mine.
I have decaf Earl Grey, if that counts.
He's the great man of decaf Earl Grey also.
Well, it's appropriate because decaf Metcalf is going to come up a time or two in this podcast.
There we go.
There it is.
I mean, just what a freaking night. Like, Al, I gotta tell you, I just love watching football here.
There's something about the Seahawks games on NBC too. Obviously, there's a history that we don't need to talk about with the first one, but then obviously, like, what, 4 years ago, I think it was in 2016, in like November, there was the CJ ProSize game that ended on the Gronkowski fade in the end zone. So there's something just like
really cinematic.
It's just incredible. You see the, like, I see the NBC logo. I see Al Michaels and Chris Conover sliding in, and I just have like these weird like emotions all wrapped up in just the broadcast of it, which it feels almost unlike any other opponent, any other like broadcast. Like Sunday night Patriots Seahawks is just emotional and in a crazy way.
Would you like some Pelton Cast history? The very first emergency pod
podcast history by inviting Zach onto this one.
Well, the very first emergency pod after we returned to the air was after the Seahawks Patriots game on Sunday Night Football.
Wow.
That
is huge. Yeah, making history then, making history now. Just football is such a fun sport to watch. And really the highs and the lows, the pit in your stomach that I'm assuming all of us felt during that last drive. We had a group chat that was going
earlier than
and
the
was
last drive.
Dead. There was no chatter because all of us were too stressed heading into that last drive. Nobody could talk. I'm there beating myself up for thinking earlier in the 5 minutes earlier. I'm like, oh, the Seahawks could go into the bye week undefeated. And I'm just like, what a fucking idiot for thinking that ahead of time. Of course we're going to lose this game. And to have it come down to a play that we've seen throughout the night be pretty much unstoppable, including the time that they passed, you just knew at that 1 yard line. We're even criticizing the Patriots for being like, why are they holding on to this timeout? And then we see why they're holding on to that timeout. And it's set up for the key play that has happened throughout the night to happen on the very last play of the game.
It is crazy to me that the last two games have ended with the Seahawks-Patriots games have ended on the 1 yard line with Gronkowski from Brady on a fade, Cam Newton on a goal line dive, both times somehow the Seahawks make it out with Delano Hill, obviously, you know, the hero, but just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little different last time because it was Cam Chancellor who was playing the hero. It was like, that was a little more predictable. You know, if it had been Jamal Adams making the play today, that would have been more similar. But in this case, yes, some unlikely heroes. It's Leno Hill and LJ Collier, the first two, to get to Cam Newton. Superman, who definitely dons his cape inside the five. Like, he's always been unstoppable in this situation, but somehow in the context of the New England offense, he's even more unstoppable than unstoppable.
Yeah, no, it's just incredible. I mean, watching him in that offense, too, when he could just stand back there with no Seahawks pass rush and pick it apart. He was throwing, he was running. It was just awesome overall. It's a scary pick.
When they completed that pass, that was to Jacoby Myers, right, who got them to the one? It's just like, oh, crap. They have a timeout left, and they're going to run it in with Cam.
Yep.
We know what to expect here. Was there any concern going into that play that similar to what they'd done earlier in the game, where they basically ran it as not a pop pass, but, you know, the Seahawks knew what they were expecting, and then Cam threw a touchdown. Was there any concern that they would try something like that?
They ran the Tebow, first off. That's what they ran. No, I wouldn't say there was any concern from me that they would run that.
This was it. Power on power. We knew it was coming. I mean, the only thing that we had going for us in this situation is similar to when the Seahawks have run from the goal line. When the defense knows what's coming, it's a little bit less difficult to run.
But that's the thing, is like earlier in the game, they knew what was coming then too, and they just could not stop it. I mean, maybe the fact that you had a timeout to specifically sit there and, you know, basically draw up in the whiteboard what you're going to do there, if it was like an NBA-style timeout. Maybe that, but it was also just about guys had to make a play, and they did.
Isn't this what happened the last time the Seahawks played Cam in Carolina? There were like two or three stops, I think, by Bobby Wagner. I think notably had one on like fourth and one plays down near the goal line where the Panthers were going up and down the field, and the Seahawks made some like really clutch red zone stops.
That was
stops.
True. That was the game where they missed the long field goal, and then the Seahawks came back and won. But earlier in the game, there were a bunch of red zone stops, right?
Just, they only kept it close because of the stops, yeah.
And it was one of those games that, like, we talked about this previewing the podcast, where it was like, this is going to feel like a Panthers game. And there were a lot more possessions and a lot more scoring than those.
There were not a lot more possessions,
I guess,
as it turns out.
The possessions were more efficient than the Panthers games as far as getting in the end zone. But this just felt – it did not even feel like a Patriots game. This felt like a high-level Panthers game.
Yeah, this felt like the 2017 home Panthers game maybe, where like they went up a few touchdowns in the first half, except we also tried to score in the first half. That's what I kept thinking throughout. It's like, this is one of those games the Seahawks lose at home where they're complacent, except they're actually not complacent. And it was absolutely magical to watch them try to score four quarters of the game minus one drive.
I mean – It kept being described by a certain phrase during the NBC broadcast. That phrase is now, I don't know what's beyond mainstream, but it's now beyond mainstream, let Russ cook.
I was just sent, well, I think the word is international, because I was just sent a TSN broadcast on Twitter where the TSN people are calling up let Russ cook. The only thing I would modify today is I think the actual phrase got cut off in translations, let Russ cook Stephon Gilmore.
Oh boy,
that's pretty vicious.
I mean, that's one of many key plays in this game that we should get to. Should we go through some of the turning points, the mini turning points in this one?
I just want to talk a little bit more generally for a second here, because Russell fucking Wilson. I mean, come on. We're on basically perfect game number two of the season from Russ.
Six touchdowns.
Six well,
including the pick six. I'm not sure if we're going to count that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Really, the only mistake that he made in the entire game was because of Greg Olsen. Russ did nothing wrong on the play. In the box score, it's going to show up as a Russell Wilson pick six. The ball was perfectly placed. This wasn't a situation where Olsen had to reach back and go get it. This was, it bounced right off of his hands and unfortunately right into Jason McCourty's hands for a pick six. But, like, Russ did, was perfect in this entire situation.
I want to note that was Devin McCourty.
Devin McCourty. Okay, sorry.
And also the completion down to the one was to N'Keal Harry, not Jacoby
Myers.
Wow.
So. Don't quote me on any Patriots.
Josh Gordon had a good game for them, though, right now. That was awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, Jarrett Stidham, unstoppable one.
Demir Bird, not Dominique Bird. He's a different player.
But, I mean, we're – it feels like we're watching history with these Russ games that he's played two in a row of. And I honestly just can't even imagine that you could watch these games – and not want to see more of this. The idea that you could watch this and be like, this isn't the most exciting thing that I'm seeing in sport. In particular, Russ throwing the ball downhill. It is a down the field. It is a beautiful thing to see. And the idea that you don't want more of that is just absurd to me. That's why we want Russ to cook.
Guys, it has been a really hard year, and the thought that we have at least 14 more games potentially with Russell Wilson like getting to throw downfield to DK Metcalf, to Tyler Lockett, even to David Moore, maybe to Josh Gordon is like thrilling and satisfying in a way. Just it's like we needed this. It was almost like I felt I was at Clint tonight. I was so emotionally invested and excited. And every time the camera pans right now with Russ on this kind of thing, I mean, you know, depending on who it pans to, maybe you're less excited on 3rd and 1 late in the game when they throw, which I'm sure we'll get to. But like watching the camera pan to the Metcalf and Moore touchdowns tonight, I think goes up there with the most memorable Seahawk moments of the entire era for me. Like, I will not forget this game watching DK Metcalf just torch Stephon Gilmore. I just absolutely amazing and felt so, so good.
The three best individual moments to see in all of sport history are, number one, Russ throwing a deep ball and then seeing the camera pan to an open receiver for a touchdown. Bar none, excluding nobody. It is just like, there's really nothing to describe how you feel in your stomach. And it's something that we have not seen from basically any other quarterback, almost in the history of the NFL. But in our viewing history, when Matt Hass throws down the field, you're not like, well, there's going to be a receiver there open for a touchdown. This is unprecedented territory.
It's not as impressive when Aaron Rodgers like throws a, like a little out pass, though, right? Like we covered that.
Okay, number two. Ken Griffey Jr., when the swing happens and he knows it's a homer and starts walking, that is like, there's chills, right? And then number three, GP throwing it up for the alley-oop. When
that's
you know it's anywhere near the hoop and the Rain Man is going to throw it down. Those too are low. The three greatest moments in sport. And we get to witness one of them weekly for the next 14 weeks. Hello!
I don't know. There's going to be rain some of those weeks. I'm not sure if we can count it at all 14 of those weeks. But, I mean, I know there have been less probable Russ completions, including the David Moore touchdown in this very game, which was the third most improbable, according to Next Gen Stats, since they started tracking it in 2017. But for my money, the pass to DK, him beating Stephon Gilmore, the reigning defensive player of the year, that is the best – like not in terms of not the most important, but it is the best qualitatively pass of Russell Wilson's career. That's what I'm going with.
I mean, the only one that sticks in my head is the Lockett catch against Kansas City. That's the only other one that I I lean on.
Thursday night against the Rams last year, when right. Lockett is like falling out of bounds. But I mean, like.
Those are more about the catch. This is like he put it so perfectly, like right there. DK's running in stride just beyond Gilmore's outstretched arms. Like all of that to me.
What
makes
about
it the
Carson throw that he had too, where it's just like he threw it up and I was like, oh, I think Russ overthrew that one.
Yeah.
And then Carson casually runs right under it to make the catch perfectly.
Never cover zero against Russ.
we're just doing like the remember when game, but I really like the Metcalf catch on Gilmore gave me real flashbacks to the 2015 NFC Championship game with the curse catch where the rainbow comes in, where the ball is so high, you don't see the ball until the very, very end. It just drops off the table, like beyond the outstretched arm. And it's just the feeling of that is just, I mean, I feel like we're just playing the game of like, remember that time, like over and over again. But gosh, that was so much fun.
It's great.
If Russ were here, it would be the Chris Farley show. Hey, you remember that time when you threw a touchdown pass in the NFC Championship game?
But that was great. The fact that he did it tonight, this wasn't the DK show, right? Like, DK had a great game against Stephon Gilmore, but also David Moore coming up with the catch, Chris Carson coming up with the catch. Russ kind of did it to everybody. I mean, Lockett just so efficient.
Freddie Swain?
Freddie Swain! Swain train.
Get on board, everybody.
Even when they showed the play call on the Freddie Swain touchdown, it was like, look at Shoddy, right? Press box Shoddy is maybe number 4 on the list of most exciting things to see. You see Brian Schottenheimer in the press box, you're like, okay, I can see the rusty ball. Then there's the junior swing. Then there's the Kemp to pay, or the Peyton to Kemp alley-oop. Then maybe there's Edgar Martinez with a line drive, and then number 5. Shoddy in the press box.
Shoddy moving to the press box is the curse gets LASIK of this season. Like, it just, his whole aperture has changed. He sees the field. He steps back, and it's just letting Russ cook all day. It's incredible.
I'm wearing these glasses in honor of press box Shoddy.
If Russ is cooking and the receivers are eating, does that mean Shoddy is making up the menu? Is that what he's doing
chef,
here?
He's the chef de cuisine, right?
There you go. There you go.
The chef de cuisine. Oh, man. Well, it was so exciting to just watch this team play offense. But like you were saying, things got a little bit hairy at the very end.
It's eventful to watch this team play defense. It is not as fun to watch this team play defense. There's just a lot happening. There's a lot going on. Okay.
Also a lot not happening, like pass rush.
Well, that is aggressively fair. I mean, we already talked about the first big moment in this game, which is the ball through Greg Olsen's hands directly to Devin McCourty for probably the easiest pick six you could possibly have. I'm amazed that return was 43 yards, but the Seahawks respond a really excellent drive, their longest sustained drive of the night, tie it at 7. Patriots come back with their own 12-play drive for a touchdown.
Quickly on the pick six, because I feel like this play sort of reminded me of plays that the Seahawks had last season that they could never quite overcome.
Last year with the fumbles at home in particular, yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of return touchdowns. Sort of an outlier, but there was the Saints return touchdown that they had when they played the Teddy Bridgewater Saints, and it was like, at the time you're watching, you're like, it's fine. We'll overcome this. And they never were quite able to. And then there was also, I want to say it was a Marcus Peters pick six against Baltimore in a game that felt fairly similar. You're like, oh, we've got this. This was before we really understood who Baltimore was. But there was the pick six near the end of the half, and the Seahawks just could never quite get over the hump in those two. But this one was like, that's in the rear view almost immediately, where they have this pick six, and then it's boom, the Seahawks are right down the field. I mean, they had a chance to go into this game up at the half if it weren't for a pretty questionable holding call. I think that they go into the game up at least 17-14.
Yeah. They did have one of the big issues in this throughout this game was getting the Patriots off the field when they were on third and long. And one of the few times they managed to do this late in the first half, third and 8 for the Patriots at the Seahawks 31. And Rex Burkhead is dropped behind the line by Ugo Amadi, forcing a 51-yard field goal attempt by Nick Folk that was, as Zach put it, 3% off.
I'm glad you did that. I did hear from a lot of Patriots fans informing me that Nick Folk is not a rookie from Marshall, which I really do appreciate them pointing out. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, the Seahawks' subsequent drive is the one that was stalled out by the holding penalty that you mentioned. They ended up after a Russell Wilson sack on 1st and 15, steering at 2nd and 26, and that was too much to overcome. So the Patriots, after, by the way, we have to mention an amazing Michael Dixon punt to just drop it at the 5, have it go bounce straight up the air, land at the 2-yard line with no Patriot back to receive. Dixon was just in his bag there.
Dicko Mode is back. He might have taken a bit of a year off last year, but after the punts this season, we've got full on Dicko Mode.
The other stop the Seahawks had in a key third sit-down situation, Patriots get to 3rd and goal at the Seahawks 7 on their first drive of the second half. This game tied at 14. Jamal Adams on the safety blitz coming around from the left edge. Cam Newton runs right. Adams runs all the way around, tracks him down, stops him at the line of scrimmage for what was technically recorded as a sack to force the Patriots into a field goal there. And that gave the Seahawks the opportunity to take the lead on that David Moore touchdown pass. We've hyped up Russell Wilson's passes, but let's talk about David Moore on this play, because it was a pretty incredible display of footwork to come down in bounds on this one.
Yeah, no, I think the most incredible thing is it almost felt like there was a force field on the pylon, like knocked his foot back in bounds. When Russ threw it, first of all, like we could talk about the camera panning. When the camera pans to David Moore, it's a little tough.
It's a different emotion.
You're a little concerned. I mean, I guess against Cam, the last time we probably saw him on a deep pass to the left side there toward that end zone was the touchdown he had to win the game on 4th down against Carolina. So maybe we shouldn't have been quite as concerned. But when that happened, I truly thought it was a bad call because there's no way he could have gotten his feet down. Like, I was there with like the Patriots DB. Like, it's fine, but it's going to get overturned, right? There's no way. And it felt like the most improbable catch, but then you see like the Seth Walder tweet, whoever tweeted out the Next Gen Stats thing about it being like a 6% chance of completion. And that is the kind of thing that you see Russell Wilson do. So when people like, you know, enemy of the Seahawks, Bill Barnwell, say that Russell Wilson's not in his top 3 quarterbacks to watch, he must have been asleep tonight. Because you'd have to be sleeping not to see Russ in the top 3.
Seahawks come back and get a big play, their biggest play of the game on defense, is Quentin Dunbar, who was picked on early in this game, was struggling against the aforementioned Demir Byrd. Huge play. had a chance at an interception in the first half that he was unable to secure, but this one jumps the route, comes up with the pick. Seahawks get the ball in New England's half of the field with a chance to extend the lead.
Go ahead, Zach.
I just think the thing that's amazing about this team now is we're that team now. It has kind of the really good off, at least now, not the jinx, but we have a really good offense. And it seems like the defense was terrible today, but we had kind of a number of discrete splash plays that turned the game, the Adams play, the Hill play at the end, the interception. And it's like we're that team now where essentially you're forcing other offenses to execute almost perfectly because you are now reducing it down to where you have maybe 3 or 4 strikes. You can't make those bad plays because otherwise Russell Wilson's going to throw his 4 and 5 touchdowns. It's going to be enough. So it feels amazing to be the team that like has that margin from the offense being so good, forcing the other team to execute perfectly, which is where I feel like their Seahawks have been in the second half for so long now. It was just having zero margin for error and having Russ have to hit all these plays. It was great being on the other side of that.
Yes. Well, it felt like this was a really game. I mean, maybe the most important, aside from the final stop, defensive play of the game, giving the Seahawks the chance to put the Patriots at arm's length after that was like, okay, they're going to go down and score now. Like, we can feel confident in this. It's one of those plays where if you're a Patriots fan, you're going, ah, fuck. Like, you can't give them an opportunity. In the way, I mean, this feels like, you know, when you watch the Ravens, when you watch the Chiefs, teams like that, where the game against the Chargers earlier today, you're just like, you can't punt to the Chiefs. They're going to win the game. And then they do. And this was one of those situations where it's like, you can't give up this turnover to the Seahawks. They're going to go down and score. And then they did. It's kind of incredible to have that kind of offense and that level of efficiency to be the team that's keeping the pressure on.
Yeah, they went 52 yards in 5 plays. This was the one that they capped off with the Freddie Swain touchdown pass with Tyler Lockett lined up in the pistol. Rocket a 3-point stance. So I don't know when we're going to see that one get paid off by Shotty into something else, but I look forward to it.
That was incredible. Yeah, no, that felt good. I by the way, I'm okay with Tyler Lockett also getting a carry at some point this season. That would be kind of amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm down with it, yeah.
I mean, they kept faking end-arounds during this game, too, where it's like – and never handed one off. David Moore is one who they like to get it to him on the end-around. But there's a lot that still can be paid off from this offense. And it feels like there's a level of creativity here that has not been seen in this offense for the last couple of years. Or it's like – has been seen in these little clips and moments, and now it's happening in the first quarter, in the second quarter, in the third quarter, and even in the fourth quarter, where it's something it's something that's happening throughout the game. And
I think, I mean, in fairness, I think a lot of the tape nerds who made sure to get at me on Twitter a lot last season would say Shadi's been drawing his plays up. It's just the Seahawks have been in 3rd and 14, 2nd and 14. I mean, these terrible down and distances where they weren't actually able to get into their offense and do it. So, I mean, I think a lot of people would tell me that Shadi is actually not bad. Maybe I've been too critical in the past. It's just been that the philosophy has been wrong. He's actually like really good at designing plays and making a menu, right, for us. It's just that he held items off the menu that maybe should have been there early in the game. We only got the good one in the fourth quarter. Whereas now it just feels like the world's open and we are seeing an incredible creativity. I have to say for myself, I've been obviously very negative about Schottenheimer. And on these 2 weeks, it does feel like he's killing it.
You heard it at In-N-Out. Put the double-double animal style on the actual menu. Don't force people to go off the menu for it. Just put it out there. Let it cook. Notably in this game, the Seahawks only faced third down.
Do not chew that In-N-Out. This is a scenario where I do not agree with. You do not want to let the In-N-Out double-double animal style. Look, In-N-Out is done forever if they get rid of the secret menu. Are you
I'm not saying to get rid of it. I'm just saying incorporate it into the actual menu in case the first time you win and
you
don't know.
You need the 60% of the In-N-Out experience is being there with somebody who's new and being like, you know about the secret menu, right? Yeah. Or hearing somebody talk about how, oh, they went to In-N-Out a couple years ago and they didn't know about the menu and they got they're like, it sucks. Why would I go there? And you're like, no. You're ordering wrong.
That is not
the less wrong.
This is how we talk about like the 2015 Russ season, where it's like, oh, you had to be there, guys. You had to be there. Like, it was amazing.
Anyways, what I was saying
still want that off the menu. That's the thing about Let Russ Cook going national. Is like when too many people are in on it, all of a sudden it gets a little scary.
Well, when Mark Schlereth is in on it, it gets a little scary. Chris Collinsworth is a different story altogether. Friend of the pod, Chris Collinsworth.
Still working on Salk right now. Somebody tweeted today. I swear to God, it was like the Let Carson Carey tweet was the closest thing to liberate Virginia that I've seen in the last 3 months. Right?
In fairness to Mike
liberate
Salk.
Michigan?
In fairness to Mike Salk, I looked at his timeline and he tweeted back to back, let Russ Cook and let Carson Carey, which again is kind of like a both sides y like annoying combo, but like he was not trying to actually make let Carson Carey go viral, I think.
He was just having some fun with it. Anyways, what I was saying is I thought it was notable that the Seahawks only faced 7 third downs in this game as compared to 12 for the Patriots, who converted nearly all of them, but that's the best way to pick up third down is to avoid third down altogether.
Yep. That's the thing that I think the nerds understand that the football minds can't grasp is picking up third downs is nice, but not having third downs is even better. The nerds don't love going for it on fourth down. The nerds love getting first down on first down and second down.
I mean, we also love going for fourth down.
It's a you have to do it type situation. It's not a you want to do it. This is what Let Russ Cook is all about. It's not about let's pick up a third down and a fourth down. It's let's right. go do it from the very beginning. Let's not wait until the fourth quarter. Let's just go get it. Make the whole plane out of Let Russ Cook.
After that Seahawks touchdown to go ahead 28-17, New England goes 77 yards in 6 plays. That was the Cam Newton pass that he paid off to Jacob Johnson for the touchdown. The Seahawks did come up with a key stop on the 2-point conversion. That was a Cam run, right? On the 2-point conversion?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that could have made it a field goal game, which loomed large later in this one. The Seahawks then end up going three and out in a situation where penalties were a big factor. A hold on Damian Lewis puts them in first and 20. They end up in third and 18, and this is a case where they did not put the game in Russell Wilson's hand. Instead, a draw on third and 18 to Travis Homer that leaves them punting to New England up five with 12 minutes to go in the game.
This was particularly frustrating to me because, I mean, the Seahawks are doing so good, and I've never taught someone how to ride a bike, but I imagine it's like when you like try it and like you don't want them to fall and then get scared and not want to get back on. So every time the Seahawks like have some failure with passing and like they have another bad possession, I'm like, no, please, please, please. It's going to go okay, guys. Don't worry. Don't worry. You fell once. It's okay. You know, like put a Band-Aid on every single time.
It's just part of the process.
It's frustrating too because they scored the first touchdown, I think, on a driver. They had first and 25. Because of the Lockett personal foul. Last week they converted, a third and 20-something, which I'm pretty sure the Seahawks, I think I looked at this up tonight, they only had converted, I think, three or four in Russell Wilson's first eight seasons, third and 20 or longer. And in the last two games, I think they converted third and, was it 20 tonight?
Third and 19.
Third and 19 and third and 20 last week. So they are doing what they have literally done, like, once every two seasons. They are doing once like in the last two games. So the fact that they are taking like that step in aggressiveness, I mean, is there early run pass split where we actually won it? Probably not quite yet. Some of that's how the Patriots were playing. But it is frustrating because like you look at it and you hope like that they won't let that then influence the next possession. But then of course the Seahawks came out the next possession and they were not quite so conservative. So
the Seahawks get a stop in that situation, a crucial one, as it turned out. New England forced to punt at their own 29. This was the attempt to run a pitch with Rex Burkhead on third and four that Jamal Adams just blew up. Anyone want to talk about Jamal Adams watching him play football?
I like it. It's pretty fun. I would prefer that he not try to jump that Edelman route for the 50-yard completion. That was not like exactly ideal. And I would also prefer he maybe get Cam down that one time. But he has that thing that I think great defensive Seahawks have had in the past, where like they are so obviously good that you just see them kind of pop out on screen in a way that's pretty great. There aren't that many defensive players, I feel like, who even kind of casual people, like if I'm watching with my dad, he like is who's that like number 33, because they're just so special. So I mean, he certainly is a great player. Didn't have his greatest night tonight versus the pass, maybe, but
this is like a solid B plus Jamal Adams game. It wasn't perfect in the way that last week was. I mean, there was that play where it's like, you've got Cam in your hands, bring him down. I mean, understanding that Cam Newton is a very hard quarterback to tackle. And then there was some of the pass coverage where it's like, okay, like Jamal Adams is not perfect in coverage. That's fine. He doesn't have to be. He still is cleaning up. If you've got Bobby cleaning up 50% of stuff underneath and you've got Jamal cleaning up 50% of everything else, you're still in a pretty good situation. I think he also is somebody who relies on everybody else around him and some of the injuries, which maybe we'll talk about in a second. The injuries and the ejection of Quandre Diggs probably meant that he was not able to do quite as much in this game as he maybe would have otherwise.
The next drive is a situation where I think you could have easily seen the Seahawks really rely on the run too much last year and, you know, go three and out or six and out or something like that and punt the ball back. Instead, in this situation, first and 10, they immediately pass. It's a completion to Tyler Lockett for 9 yards. It's set up second and short. They passed again on first and 10, and then on second and 10, the following set of downs. It wasn't until their third first down that they first and 10 that they actually ran with Chris Carson. And this long drive ends up resulting in the Carson touchdown pass. There's a couple of completions against cover zero here. One on third and 7 at the New England 31. New England brings heavy pressure and Wilson finds Tyler Lockett for 8 yards to pick up the first down. And then the touchdown pass to Chris Carson. Just Russ proving you don't want to big blitz him. It's never a good idea.
That's one of those ones where before it even happened, I was excited. Once I saw them bringing cover zero, I was like, oh, no, you don't do that. It's not going. Oh, that was so good.
How did this end up as a game? If we're in this moment, I mean, you're thinking this one's more or less over, right? Like when you get to this moment, it's after the Carson touchdown, it's like, okay, we can breathe a bit of a sigh of relief. We know it's the Seahawks. We know crazy shit is going to happen, but, like, it's not going to be that close. How did this end up as a game that was decided at the one-yard line on a Cam Newton play? I mean, come on after this. I was telling Luca, he was like, oh, the Seahawks are going to win. It's over. I'm like, dog, did you watch that Cowboys game earlier? It is never over until it's over, you know? Dan Quinn was over there to, you know, patting everybody on the back before then also. Although maybe Dan Quinn knows more than anybody that the game is never over. But it's just like, in that moment, I think, I don't know what the percentage odds of victory got to there, but they had to be fairly high after this moment.
They peaked at 96%, it looks like.
Yeah, it felt like a solid 96% chance. So it really incredible how quickly the Patriots were able to get down the field and score.
I will say the moment I thought I was going to jinx it by being too optimistic didn't come to pass, because once the Seahawks had driven basically to the 34 here, I was like, well, you know, even if they don't score a touchdown, if they get conservative here, they'll still kick a field goal, make it an 8-point game. They'll need a touchdown and a 2-point conversion to tie. And then I was like, all right, you can miss field goals. That's a thing that can happen. So it's very exciting that instead they punch it in for the touchdown. But the first bad thing that happened is it only took the Patriots 2 minutes and 16 seconds to score a touchdown to come back on this one, which is not ideal, I would say. There were four plays of double-digit yards on that drive, including a 33-yarder to Julian Edelman, who picked apart, I would say, the Seahawks underneath coverage with Marquise Blair not available to play in the nickel. And Leno Hill even not available to play in the nickel, since both of those ended up filling in at safety for Quandre Diggs. And should we get into that right now, I guess?
I'm not really ready for it.
Are you emotionally prepared to talk about Quandre Diggs' ejection?
No, I mean, that one's very tough for me. It's like you look at it, and it's a really bad hit. It can't happen. But it also, you look at it and think, like, how is it possible for that not to happen in football as the game is presently constructed? There's going to be hits like that. And it just felt really unfortunate, because it seems like most of the ejections I've ever seen, there was kind of some hint of malice, maybe, and it was really flagrant that it was really intentional. I don't think we've really seen in the past maybe as many times a hit that didn't feel quite as malicious or headhunty. Getting a full ejection, but certainly, like, if that's the way it's going, especially, like, I totally get it, because that is the kind of hit that's really scary and can lead to something obviously really terrible.
I don't think I know what an ejection worthy hit looks like, I suppose is what I'll say, because there have been hits that bad that definitely have not gotten players ejected in throughout the NFL in the first 2 weeks that we've seen. But there was one replay where I was like, you know, it's really not that bad. And then there was a second replay in fast motion where I was like, that's a pretty bad hit. And it was pretty clearly helmet to helmet. And it looked like Diggs was probably leading with his helmet. I think what you're saying, it's so hard to judge malicious intent in something where nobody's announcing their intent in the play. But I don't think that this was malicious intent. I think the Seahawks do want to hit hard, and I think they want to hit clean, and I think that's what Quandre Diggs was trying to do, and he just missed this time.
Yeah, malicious intent is like when DJ Swearinger, like, tries to take someone's head off, in my mind, right? Like, it's like clearly headhunting. I guess that's
especially
what
if you have a pattern. Yeah, I think is a big thing. I considered sending a DM to the group before the announcement was made. Like, that might be an ejection, guys. Like, that's
it was clearly what they were, the chatter was about. Also, it's like there's a chance of ejection here.
Well, there was, you know, they were talking about it being some sort of offensive penalty. That was kind of confusing. I don't know what happened.
Oh, they don't
there.
Call those on the Patriots.
Well, they don't call holding at all anymore, as it turns out, except on David Lewis. A lot on David Lewis.
Did the Patriots end up with a penalty? Can you remind me of a penalty? Okay.
They did. I can't think of what it was off the. There was a defense. Well, we talked about the defensive hold that picked up 3rd and 19. That was a pretty key penalty. I think that was, in fact, their first one of the night. But most of the penalties they called in the Seahawks first half were procedural. There was a lot of false starts. Procedural. There was Russell Wilson throwing the ball across the line of scrimmage. Like, those are hard ones to not call. Those aren't real judgment of the judgment variety. But the other thing I'd say about the Quandre Diggs play is, even though there are some situations where it's unavoidable, like, I can't think of another hit like that that involved the Seahawks safety. So it is something they've done a good job of avoiding in the past. Maybe that's just luck, but I do think there is some control you have over it.
But to that point, I guess, last time the Seahawks played the Patriots, Earl Thomas had a big hit in the seam against Gronk, right? If Gronk ducks down, Earl could have easily hit his head. I'm not sure there's much difference between those two hits.
Yeah. A play that was probably much too celebrated for what we know about football and its effects in the year, in that case, 2016. Marquise Blair comes on in place of Quandre Diggs at safety, moving out of the nickel role he had been playing. And one of the really unfortunate things about this game is suffering an injury that sounds like it's pretty severe.
Let it be known that Zach is shaking his head sadly.
It's tough. I mean, it's tough. It's just hard to even have the reaction, you know. It just felt like today, all day, with all football, it was kind of tough. And to see it kind of happen, it did feel like that sinking feeling, like you're going to feel this in 4 weeks, you know, a few more injuries hit. But I do hope Blair's okay. I feel like we all do. Like, hopefully it's an MCL, you know, not a full ACL, so he's back in 7 weeks. But it definitely didn't look good, and they rolled him out pretty dang quick. So,
right.
That didn't look good. The Bruce Irvin injury where he goes down also didn't look good.
But Pete Carroll did not talk about that in the same tone post-game that he talked about the Marquise Blair injury. Like, reading through the tweets here.
Reading between the tweets. The Seahawks had a fairly deep secondary going into this year, and they still have a fairly deep secondary. But it's being tested a little bit, and, you know, in this game it got tested a little bit also. Trey Flowers had to play, Ugo Amadi had to play, Lano Hill had to play. Everybody had to come in prepared to play, and, you know, I'm not going to say it was perfect the entire time, but in the end, you know, somebody like Lano Hill comes up with a huge play.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's what you have to do is, you know, not necessarily be as good as the starter, but step up and make some plays.
Well, and the good thing about it is that Quandre Diggs will be back next week. This Correct. Isn't like when you're watching the game, you're like, fuck, Quandre Diggs is gone. But he was just ejected. This was not an injury. He will be back. And the starting secondary next week will still be Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs.
And luckily this isn't college. He's going to miss the first half of the next game.
which happened a lot with Marquise Blair, as it turned out back in the day. So we come to the Seahawks' final offensive possession of this game, their 10th and final offensive possession. They take over with 2:09 left. They run Chris Carson on first down, and Carson wisely does not want to go out of bounds because it's a kind of a sweep to the right end. Slides down and maybe gives up a couple of yards. Takes it down to the 2-minute warning, which is crucial, but does not get as many yards as he can and leaves the Seahawks in a 2nd-and-4 situation here. So I don't know what the right play is to do exactly here, but it certainly was a tough decision.
The yardage is more important than the time. I feel like the Seahawks are the team that is most concerned with the clock at the end of the game than any team in the NFL. You remember there was that play where
Doug Baldwin, at Jacksonville.
I was just like, why are we so concerned with this? Like, getting a first down there would have basically ended the game. And if he finishes that carry, there's a good chance he picks it up just on that carry, right? Or is, like, 9 yards. Have you seen Chris Carson run into a defender?
Fair, but there was also a group of defenders.
There's an incredible, incredible irony in the Seahawks being so careless with timeouts, but, like, anytime it gets within 3 minutes to the end of the game, players, like, sliding down so they don't go out of bounds. Brutal.
I don't think they used a second half timeout in this one, so that was a positive thing. 2nd-and-4, Carson carries for 3 yards.
They used timeouts at the end of the game.
Well, yeah, but they took them to the end. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 2nd-and-4, Carson runs for 3 yards. And now it's 3rd-and-1, and the Seahawks do, in fact, put the game in Russell Wilson's hands. According to the reporting, Pete Carroll's comments after the game, a couple of short routes got covered, which is why he threw the deep ball to Lockett. And then also there was the inaccurate snap on that one that kind of made life a little more difficult for us. But I would say, as exciting as it is to see the camera pan deep, a situation on 3rd-and-1 where there is no value beyond picking up the first down is not the time you want to see that.
Really similar to the Metcalf catch against Philadelphia last year, right? where in the playoffs, where the Seahawks are like, they just need to ice the game. They're like kneeling on sliding down on second and four, and all of a sudden it's third and one. It's just like, not just let Russ cook, but like, you know, put the gas on, turn it up, turn the flame up, and just let it go.
Fresh bots, I don't know,
would you guys rather? Yeah, don't fire up the hibachi. Would you guys have rather seen them run there? I'm curious, because I mean, obviously they have a long history of losing games on like short runs. I mean, there's the Kansas City loss that still haunts me from like 2014, where former Seahawk, I think Jay Howard, blew up a run late that for some reason I can't get out of my head. You know, many others.
How about the St. Louis season opener where the Marshawn Lynch gets stopped on fourth and one in overtime?
Is this the Deion Bailey game?
Yes.
Oh, that's not good. That's not good.
We've seen it happen a lot of times. It felt like in this one, did the Seahawks have basically any carries for no gain in this game? It felt like they must have. The push they were getting off the line was pretty good.
And that's true.
We've seen many Seahawks offensive lines get no push whatsoever, or have numerous carries for zero or 1 yard or whatever. Felt like they were getting some, you know, they were getting some yardage on almost every carry. I also have to say, despite the fact that running backs don't matter, Chris Carson's pretty good at picking up a yard.
Some of that has to be due to, I mean, didn't New England get announced in a nickel defense? Like, they had like, I think, five defensive linemen, one linebacker, and five DBs, I think, announced.
Yeah, they did it as 5-1-5, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it definitely is. That plays into probably some of the success that Seahawks had running. I mean, they still weren't super efficient running, but they did almost kind of net out at almost zero EPA per play, both early and total rush. So it wasn't, you know, a disaster, certainly. And they were much more efficient than they've been in some games. Hard to know, I guess, how much is the Seahawks line and how much is New England kind of trying to take Russell Wilson away, although that did not go well for them.
It didn't go the best. I was going to say the thing that we never saw in this game was Russ keeping the ball on a read option or anything like that after he fairly aggressively did so in the first half at Atlanta. And I don't know if that was just a matter of what New England was doing on the edge. That's the thing I would have liked to see in this is, you know, get all 11 offensive players involved in the play by making Russ a threat as a rusher. But I'm okay with the decision to pass. Like, I don't want to be just Mr. Hindsight here.
I was expecting a run and would have been fine with a run in the scenario. Even if it doesn't work, it's like it's a yard, you know, like I think they can pick up that yard. I'm not upset about the decision to pass. I'm not sure how I feel about a deep ball to Tyler Lockett. But also, I mean, we're talking inches away from a catch there, too. It wasn't right. Like they missed it by very much. It's just, you know, the probability for most teams, that's not a very probabilistic play. For the Seahawks, it's something that they do seem to hit fairly often.
I think I probably prefer it to the Will Tukuafu fullback dive from the Rams, like 2016, if we're going to go back to old scarring. So it could be worse.
Well, not tonight. Not anymore tonight. We've done it enough. Well, we should say, though, I mean, the issue that our buddy Ben Baldwin raised on Twitter is, should the Seahawks have gone for that fourth and one there on their own side of the field in a situation where it effectively would have ended the game? That's a bit aggressive for me.
I think there's probably more of a case, too. They didn't get the timeout expired. So at that point, if they fail on fourth down, they have the ball at the 30. I guess time is literally no problem, and that's pretty scary. Maybe I'm not quite there yet on the revolution, but I was when I saw that tweet, it was like, yeah, you're more bold than I am because I don't think I can do it. Because, I mean, the odds of the Patriots, too. The Patriots had some chunk plays tonight, but it didn't feel like they were consistently generating, like, 25, 30-yard plays. They were getting a lot of chunks and taking time, but it did feel like the Seahawks had a chance to kind of keep them from going the way Dixon's playing, going a pretty far drive. Now, of course, they actually got to the 1 yard line, so I was completely wrong on that. But
I mean, the argument that Ben made that I disagreed with was he said time isn't really a factor, and I thought time was going to be a factor, and it did because they got first and goal at the one and were only able to run one play. So time ended up pretty damn important in this one, as it turned out.
They took their time on that drive also, right? Like, they Donovan McNabb did against the Patriots in the Super Bowl a little bit.
There was 22 seconds between their first down snap when they had a 13-yard completion on the first play of this drive, and then their next snap came at the 120 mark. There was another 20 seconds after they had a 17-yard pickup to N'Keal Harry. So, yeah. And then the really interesting decision was, You know, they completed this play starts at 36 seconds. The completion to Julian Edelman down to the Seahawks 13. Decide to go no time out there with only the one remaining. Save it, and 24 seconds runs off the clock before they snap the ball again. The incomplete pass to Edelman in the end zone. So that gave them only three more plays, but as it turned out, it seemed like the right decision because they had the timeout left, as you mentioned at the top of the podcast, after the completion to N'Keal Harry that got it down to the one.
But if they have more of those, like, they're getting in if they have a second of those. It's basically what the situation that they end up is, do you want one play from the one, or do you want two to three plays from a little bit further back?
Yeah. Honestly, it's just crazy. I mean, just going back, the last three Seahawks Patriots games, right? Two times ago, it's Pete Carroll with the questionable time management. We don't need to get into. Last time, it was Pete not taking time out as Bill let the clock run down, and they got fourth and goal. I believe it was the Gronk fade, right? I think that was on fourth and goal, and he ran the clock down perfectly. And this time, I really thought they should have taken time out when they had that play at like 35, 40 seconds, like you said. That was bizarre to me, given where they were at, because they ended up not getting anything beyond first and goal, right? That was it. That was the end, was on first and goal. So it does feel good maybe to actually have Belichick screw it up. Now we know that Bill made two mistakes tonight, one on the time management and one not knowing how to like wear a mask correctly. I guess in three, the parenting that leads your kid to have that kind of a mullet.
A lot of Steve Belichick action during this game.
I feel like one of the baby fantasy geniuses may end up with a mullet at some point. I don't feel like that can be ruled out.
Oh my God! Like there was nepotism on both sides of that field tonight.
that was the real winner tonight.
I found out also. So what's most important is the Seahawks came up with a crucial stop. The Seahawks are 2-0.
I mean, you kind of need to be the way the NFC West is going right now.
I mean, it's tough. Can I play a little trivia with you guys? Now at the end of the game here, the Patriots scored 30 points. In the Russell Wilson era, the Seahawks have allowed 30 points. 20. I just counted this, so this could be off by one because this is manual counting. But I believe it's happened 23 times in the Russell Wilson era. They have previously won five of those games. Can you name the five games they previously had won with the opponent scoring 30 points?
Okay, so the Houston game.
Yeah, that is the top with 38.
Pittsburgh.
That is, 2015 Pittsburgh was 30.
Is this just regular season or regular season in playoffs?
Just regular season.
Did the Broncos game, did they get there?
They did not.
Mm.
You're talking about the Peyton the year after the Super Bowl?
I will say it skews pretty recent, given the quality of the defense has somewhat degraded over time.
Well, that was a really generous way of putting it, Zach. I've got to give you credit for that one.
I can finish it off if you want.
The Rams last year?
No, 29.
29!
The Seahawks were 5-18 prior to this in games, the opponent scoring 30 points.
Did the Niners get to 30 in that game on Monday night?
There were, I will tell you, there were two last year, not the Niners, but one was a primetime game, and then another was a primetime game in 2018.
Kansas City.
That's correct. That's 31 points.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then last year, two ones that I probably would not have guessed, to be honest. Do you want me to read these out?
Yeah, I can't think of it off the top of my head. So
Tampa Bay, and then somehow Minnesota, okay, which I had completely forgotten that they beat Minnesota last year 37-30 in a pretty similar scoreline.
That was one of those games where Minnesota came back and just lightning fast scored after the Seahawks scored a touchdown.
This game was actually pretty similar to that. Yes.
Well, I think someday in the future, when we're recapping the lists of great Seahawks regular season games, some of those ones that were on Zach's list, the Houston, the Pittsburgh game stand out as particularly fun to me. The Kansas City one is obviously on there. This one is for sure going to be there, is one of the great Seahawks regular season victories. It was a lot of fun to watch because of the fact that they won. It would have been so horrible to watch had they lost.
Yeah, and honestly, it just felt so good to – it feels so good to watch them continue to be a little more fun. And it just feels like we have all these years built up of, like, wanting to see them do it. Those little glimpses, right? We talk about 2015 Pittsburgh. We talk about 2017 Houston. Yeah, 2018 can't actually. All three of those games are probably iconic, I would say, in the era.
Robert Mays pointed this out on Twitter when Chris Collinsworth late in the game, midway through the game, was like, "Yeah, it feels like they're finally figuring out how to use Russell Wilson," and it's like he's in his ninth season. And I assume that was actually Michaels referring to Shoddy. It's only their third season together. But it was pretty amusing. It's like, oh, they finally figured out a way to use this guy who's one of the very best quarterbacks in the NFL. Good for you.
And it was to literally just use him. The standards here aren't very high. Just like, don't like pass the ball before it gets to 3rd and 12. Like, that's all we're asking for here. We're not like asking Pete to like go Harbaugh on like 4th and 2, you know, on your own like 20, like years with Lamar. It's just like, how about we like just throw in some passes? Like, tonight they had 31 early down passes and 24 early down runs, which is actually, I would say, probably league wide, probably not a very high ratio of like letting the quarterback cook generally. But like that, I'm happy with it because it's such a departure. Like, I'm thrilled. You've given it to me, Shoddy. Maybe in a year I'll be jaded, but I am here and I'm excited. And you know what? Just the fact that we get the joy right now of maybe 14 more, hopefully more, times to watch Russell Wilson in his peak, do the pan, run around. It is just really exciting, especially with everything that everyone's going through. There are so many things in the world that are so much more serious right now. The fact that there's 3 hours every Sunday that we get to kind of just be idiots and watch something and get really excited about is just an incredible blessing.
I think we get to do it next week against the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, my God. Oh no, is that real? So... Oh no, I did not know.
Oh, no. Yep, it's happening. Not real. Oh, no. Only 7 days away. Looking forward to that emergency podcast. But that wraps it up for this one. Zach, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. This is amazing to be a fan of the emergency pod, but actually get to participate, step behind the curtain. Incredible experience.
And thanks for listening.
Thanks.